Ike, this is Coco. There's a group of three headed your way.
I said, to me? Coming to me?
I don't know, but I think you tripped an alarm. The key wasn't the only protection. They're moving with a purpose. They just passed me. You've got about 30 seconds to get out, but you can't come out the way you went in. Find another way on the other side.
Holy shit. I ran to the far side, the dock side, looking for an escape. I found another roll-up gate, but nothing that would give me easy access to the walkway outside. There was no regular door on the dock front. I said, I got nothing in here. Can you interdict? Brett came on saying, I see them, and they're not out for a stroll. They're definitely on a mission. I jerked the roll-up door, getting no movement. It was locked tight, and even if it was the same key, mine was broken off inside the original door. I heard the men outside the door and grabbed a steel support beam, shimmying up it and launching myself higher into the rafters. I balanced on a beam, then slid to the rear, pinning myself against the wall. They entered, flashlights spraying all over the place, but none up top. They wandered around a little bit, then began to leave. I heard one say something about a faulty alarm, and I hung tight, breathing a sigh of relief. Another said,
that Jim's lock wasn't faulty. Something's going on. Someone was in here and might still be. Let's search it for real. Find the lights to this place.
Christ. They stumbled around a bit, but nobody could seem to find a switch that would turn on the illumination. I knew they'd eventually locate me, with or without the overhead lights. I clicked my earpiece 3 times, the code for in trouble, need help now. Jennifer came back on whispering.
I'm right outside. The walkway is clear. If I do something, it's got to be contained inside. You want me to penetrate?
Brett said, stop, stop, do nothing. There's a cop car next to me, and it's not a rent-a-cop one. It's real. The men gave up on the light switch and began searching in earnest, all flashing their beams into every nook and cranny of the small warehouse, and occasionally shining them up. They went to the far side, and I took the moment to actually talk. I whispered,
Coco, go to blood. Get out of the blast radius.
What about you?
Don't worry about me.
What? No way. I'm coming in.
I hissed. Get your fucking ass out of here now. She said,
what are you going to do?
Play a little Splinter Cell.
What's that mean?
Brett got it immediately. He said,
Coco, come to me, exfil now.
She said, I'm coming, I'm coming. What about Pike?
The men came back toward my location, stabbing the darkness with their beams of light. I sized them up. There were 3 of them. 2 looked in shape, and 1 had a gut that was over his belt by about 1 foot. Probably the guy in charge. On the net, Brett said,
he'll be just fine. You ever play the video game Splinter Cell?
I heard her huffing as she ran.
What the hell are you talking about?
The men came directly below me. Brett said, trust me, Pike's better than Sam Fisher. If he called it, he'll be fine. And I dropped from the ceiling, landing on top of Fat Man, driving him into the ground. The other 2 whirled toward me, their lights flashing like laser beams, stabbing all over the place, trying to find the essence of the violence in their midst. I snatched the light of the closest man before it highlighted me, seemingly out of thin air for the target who held it, and punched him straight in the throat, causing him to collapse, rolling on the floor and gasping with guttural spurts. I turned to the other man, who was now whipping his light around like he was schizophrenic, desperately trying to find the threat. I trapped the hand holding it, letting him know he'd found the boogeyman, and he freaked out, thrashing like a madman. He swung a hard left and I ducked under it, still holding his hand, his body rotating from the blow. I swung around, jerking his hand up behind his back, then launched forward, snapping the gristle in his shoulder and driving him into the ground. He screamed and hit the concrete, softening the fall with his forehead. He quit fighting. I stood up, then checked each man, making sure they were breathing. The one I'd punched in the throat was rasping and rolling on the ground, but he'd live. The other 2 were out cold. I ran to the door, knelt down, and cracked it open, whispering,
I'm coming out. Am I clear?
Brett said,
clear. I say again, clear.
I exited, took 1 look around the wharf, then sprinted back to Brett's location, finding Jennifer with wide eyes, amazed I was walking free. I said, "Time to go." Brett started walking toward the pedestrian bridge, saying, "I guess that went okay." I took Jennifer's hand, trying to blend in again, saying, "Sam Fisher would have been proud. All I was missing was a sticky cam." Jennifer said, "How did you get out?" I said, "Play the game." 49. We met back in my suite to convene a short war council prior to contacting the task force. Earlier, before we'd penetrated the warehouse, I'd sent transcripts of the conversation at the castle, and Kurt had told me he'd wait at the office for a final report. It was closing in on 4 a.m. in Cape Town, which meant it was only 9 p.m. in Washington. Kurt would definitely still be there. I heard a knock on my door, and Jennifer let in Brett. He looked around and said, "Where's the psycho?" "Still out. Haven't heard from her." He pursed his lips but remained quiet. I said, "She's fine. She'll be back." He said, "What are we going to tell Kurt? What's your preferred course of action?" "I want to take that fucker down. They're training for a free-fall operation, and we just saw a stockpile of weapons in a warehouse secured by Tyler Malloy. There's some nefarious shit going on here." "You know that's not going to be enough. Nefarious shit doesn't rise to the level of task force involvement. It's got to be related to terrorism, not to African shenanigans. Tyler's payment for all this is something bad, and he's going to sell that to someone who's not in America's best interests. They mentioned Project Circle." Brett nodded and said, "Hey, I agree with you. And if I was still working for the CIA, I'd work an angle to take him out as a threat against U.S. interests. But I'm now with the task force. Now, we have limits. We do terrorism, not all source threats." I said, "Well, let's see what those limits are." I nodded to Jennifer and said, "Get us online with the task force." She manipulated the laptop. We heard a bunch of bleeding and bleeps, and then saw some staff guy on the screen. Jennifer said, "Can you hear me?" He said, "Yes, go." "This is Prometheus Pike. We have a scheduled contact with the CEO of Blaisdell Consulting." He nodded and said, "I'm not sure he's here. He might be at dinner." Jennifer said, "No dinner needed. We're secure." He smiled and said, "Roger that. Stand by. I'll go find him." That exchange was a dance to make sure we weren't under duress. If Jennifer had said, "Okay, well, call us back," or "How long should we wait," or anything else, the guy would know she was calling with a gun to her head. "No dinner needed" was the response that released him. We sat around, staring at the walls, waiting on him to find Kurt, and then heard a knock on the door. Brett went to it, and then glanced back at me with a smile. He opened the door, and Shoshana entered, fired up. She was wired and blasting sparks. She came right to me, held out a phone, and said, "We need to go to Durban today." I said, "Whoa, whoa, what's up?" "Some Eastern European guy assassinated the man I was going to question. Killed him with an overdose of heroin. But they talked beforehand. My target mentioned Aaron. His friend in Durban was the man who coordinated for the safe house Aaron was interrogated in." She could barely say the final part. I glanced at the computer screen, but it was still blank. This was the worst time to talk to her, as I had seconds before I had to talk to Kurt. I said, "Okay, okay. We're on with the task force here shortly."
"Pike, that guy is going to Durban to kill the contact. I don't know who that European is, but he's cleaning house. We're going to lose the thread."
I said, "What did this guy look like?" She described him, and I knew it was Stanko. Now Tyler was deeply, deeply involved in whatever was going on. He wasn't just providing arms. He was killing to protect the sale. She held out the phone and said,
"I have the contact's number. A man named Ashan. The European said he was going to meet him today, and that means he's going to kill him."
Which introduced a little bit of pressure, if it was real. I said, "Why do you believe that?"
"Because he killed the target I was after. Not only that, he killed the man who provided them the heroin. He murdered them both, then planted evidence around them to cause the police to look at a drug crime. It wasn't a snap decision. It was planned. He's going to kill the man in Durban, and when he does, we'll lose Aaron."
I nodded, absorbing the information. She walked to me and took my hand, forcing the phone into it. She said,
"That's the guy's number. Get the task force to track it. We need to beat him to the target."
I started to say something, knowing that tracking the phone wasn't in the cards, and she said,
"Please, for me."
I squeezed her hand and said, "Shoshana, I'm with you, I am. But if I can get Omega for Tyler Malloy, we're at jackpot. Let me work Kurt instead of chasing a local thread. We squeeze Tyler's ass, and we have it all." She said,
"If you get permission, if you do this, will you continue? Once you take Tyler down, you have no reason. The mission will be over."
The computer bleeped, and I heard, "Jennifer, good to see you. What did you find in the warehouse?" She said,
"I'll let Pike do the talking."
I ignored the discussion, focusing on Shoshana. I said, "Yes, I will, even if it means me doing it alone." 50. Jennifer scooted out of the seat, and I sat down, my game face on. Kurt said, "Well, from that expression, there must be some wicked shit going on. What's up?" I knew I had to go full bore if I had any chance of getting authority. I said, "Sir, you got the transcript, right?" "Yeah, but there's not a whole lot in it that would constitute Omega authority. We could pass the information to the appropriate law enforcement agencies, but it doesn't look like a task force problem." I said, "Sir, I just came back from the warehouse. It's full of top-notch weapons and explosives from all over the world. These guys are planning an invasion of something. They're going to assault somewhere on the African continent, and that's going to upend whatever U.S. interests are involved. Pike, all we have is a transcript about weapons. Tyler sells weapons. It's like making a case that a mechanic is selling drugs because he's talking about repairing cars." "Sir, come on. They talked about a halo operation. They talked about training people. It was much more than a single sale of weapons." "I hear you, but it's still not a task force problem." I said, "Hang on. I have a photo of one of the weapons. Can you track it?" "Yeah, sure." I transmitted the picture of the SIG MCX and said, "See where that thing was supposed to go, because I guarantee it wasn't here." He said something to the man behind him, then returned to the screen. He said, "What do you want to do?" "Take Tyler's ass out. He has information that might be pertinent." He said, "Pertinent?" I said, "Yes, sir, pertinent. Meaning he knows where Aaron is." Shoshana leapt out of her seat, and Jennifer just about tackled her to keep her off screen. I said, "Why would you ask that?" "Don't fuck with me, Pike. I know why you're pressing, and it isn't because of some threat to America." I raised my voice, saying, "It's the same damn thing. Aaron was searching for something bad, and he found it. We were searching for something bad from a different angle, and we found it. So do you want to stop the bad or find Aaron?" "I just gave you my answer. It's the same thing." He said, "Pike, I'd really like to turn you loose, but I can't. I have to brief the Oversight Council tomorrow to get authority, and you have to give me something." I said, "Sir, they mentioned Project Circle. Did you see that? It's the reason you put me on this wild goose chase." Honestly, before this adventure, I'd had no idea what Project Circle was. But after we'd heard the tape from the laser recording, I'd turned Jennifer loose on a computer. He said, "Yeah, I did. And you did exactly what I wanted in Vegas. Look, you've accomplished your mission. You've cracked open that asshole's complicity. Now our job is over. It's not terrorism. It's State Department sanctions and FBI arrests. It's not task force. Trust me. He's not going to get away with anything. Time to come home." I said, "Sir, really? These guys are about to do something bad. Surely you can see that." He said, "My target is Tyler, and until you get me something I can use, he remains with Alpha Authority. The rest isn't terrorism. The most I can do is feed your intelligence into the system." I nodded, thinking. He said, "What's going through that bullet head?" "You brief tomorrow, right?" "Yeah. And we still have Alpha to explore, to find terrorism connections." He hesitated, then said, "Yeah, that's right. Why? You remember that guy you made me follow in Las Vegas? The one without Oversight Council sanction?" I said that for a reason, just in case he was going to tell me no. And by his expression, he knew it, too. Yes, Stanko Petrov. He's headed to Durban tomorrow. I'd like to follow him to explore, just see what he's doing. He slit his eyes and said, "What's he up to?" Innocently, I said, "I don't know. That's why I want to go. He's apparently meeting a local national up there, and I have that guy's number." "What do you want from me?" "I want NSA collection on that handset. Find out what he says and give me an anchor to continue Alpha." He leaned back and said, "Pike, I don't know about that. There's a lot of friction around such a thing." "Come on, sir. There aren't any 702 or FISA restrictions here. They can do it. We're not talking about infringing on anyone's rights. It's two foreigners talking about criminal shit on foreign soil. No Americans involved." When the task force had been created, it was done with the effort of streamlining our counterterrorism ability without duplicating other capabilities. And, because we were basically illegal, without the ability to start some Gestapo surveillance effort in the United States. The end state was that the task force was given authority to geolocate handset information through electronic signature, but was forbidden from developing the ability to actively collect on what was said on those phones. For that, we relied on the NSA. But in order to do that, we had to work through a labyrinth of cutouts to get the request into the beast in such a manner that they would collect without realizing who was requesting the information. Given all the misguided hysteria of collection on U.S. persons with 702 and FISA, it had become a pain in the ass. Kurt said, "But you're asking to circumvent FISA and 702 by default. Your immediate targets are foreign, but your actual target is American. I don't know if I can sell that. The Oversight Council will see right through it." I leaned forward and played my trump card. "You don't have to go to the Oversight Council. They've already approved Alpha. All you have to do is get it in the system."
"But the problem remains. We're twisting the system to track an American."
I said, "Cut the crap, sir. I'm asking you to track this guy so I can crack open enough information to prevent an asshole American from getting nuclear triggers to sell to terrorists. You know it, and I know it. I'm not going to start asking to listen in to Aunt Polly's phone conversations." He exhaled, and I dropped the hammer. The one he should have never given me. "Sir, it's no different from tracking a guy in Las Vegas without Oversight Council sanction. What was it you said? But he's not American, so it's legal? You knew that was bullshit when you ordered it, but you did it because you thought you were right. Don't go wrong now. It's the same fucker you had me track in Vegas, the same one. I'm on the thread. Let me get it done." He sat for a moment, looking at the screen. His setup was a little more professional than mine. I could see him fully in his chair. But I'm sure what he saw from his vantage point was a forehead and two glaring eyeballs. He shook his head and said, "Is Shoshana there?" She stood up again, and I flicked my hand behind my back. I said, "No."
"Why do you ask that?"
"Don't fuck with me, Pike. Don't twist what you're doing." I said, "Because we don't do that, right? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas?" "What's that mean?" "You have a mission you can't get approved, you send me. I have a mission I can't get approved, I call you." I leaned back from the screen and said, "It's known as keeping America safe, and it's worked out pretty well. You trusted me in Vegas, and I'm trusting you now." He laughed, a real thing that permeated the weak VPN connection. We sat for a second, saying nothing. Shoshana is taut as a tripwire. He said, "Okay, Pike. I'll get your collection. Just this once." I showed no emotion on my face, but inside, I was doing a happy dance. I said, "Thank you, sir." He said, "Tell Shoshana she owes me." I said, "What's that mean?" He reached forward with his hand and said, "You know what I mean," and cut the feed. I turned to the room, about to give out instructions, and Shoshana stood, vibrating like a piano wire. She said,
"I won't forget this, Nephilim, ever."
I chuckled and said, Yeah, right up until I give you an order. She walked to me, leaned over, and kissed my forehead. The action shocking the hell out of not only me, but both Jennifer and Brett. She drew her hand across my cheek and said,
No, I will never forget. My life is now yours.
She floated her weird gaze on me, and then she left the room. It took a second to even realize she was gone, my mind focused on her disconcerting stare. I turned to Jennifer and said, What the hell was that? What did she mean? Jennifer's mouth opened and closed, trying to find something to say. She settled with,
I don't know. Maybe she's truly sweet on you.
Brett said, Better him than me, because she's flat out scary.
51. At 500 feet, Johann worked the toggles of his parachute, turning into the final upwind segment of his flight pattern. He maintained his distance from the parachute below him and saw the man behind him doing the same. So far, the team Armstrong had built had shown martial skill in both individual abilities and team dynamics, and the air crew Tyler had provided proved they could plan and execute a jump run. All in all, Johann was gaining confidence in the mission. He saw the lead jumper touch down, and then, like dominoes, the ones behind him, until Johann was flaring his own chute. He hit the ground, ran off his speed, then rotated to collapse his chute. Watching the remaining members of the team land, all within half of a football field. It would be a greater diameter at night, but was still much smaller than the plateau where he'd placed the beacon. He half-hitched the lines of his parachute, gathered the canopy, and walked to the trucks in the middle of the drop zone, finding Colonel Armstrong sitting on one of the truck's beds. Armstrong said, Looked good. Johann nodded, saying, Yeah, only two jumps and we're tracking fine. The men are experienced. Armstrong smiled and said, I told you not to worry. Johann shucked his parachute harness, letting it fall to the ground. We'll see tonight. You have the drivers, right? Tonight was to be a full-dress rehearsal, using the same type of beacon he'd placed on the plateau, and the very drivers who would meet them on the ground. They would simulate as much of the same conditions as they could, doing a blind drop that Johann had set up earlier in the day, briefing the pilots the same way he would for the infiltration, and testing whether the drivers could find the drop zone and recover the jumpers. Armstrong said, I have the lead driver. We'll have to substitute for the others. Sir, why? Jesus, you know how critical the infiltration is. I need them all here. There are issues getting them out of the military base. The drivers aren't just privates. I thought it better to get the team leaders here. General Masebo wasn't willing to let every officer of his special forces leave. It would raise questions and... He's fucking paranoid. You'll need to work with that. What's that mean? He thinks everyone is out to get him. He doesn't trust his own men, so he definitely won't trust you. Fucking great. It won't matter. He's going to hide during the entire thing. He's not brave enough to take charge of the operation. You probably won't even see him until it's over. Anyway, a month ago, he planned a cover trip for 7 to visit South African Special Forces, something that now looks natural and would be odd to change. I thought you'd want the 6 team leaders instead of splitting that in half with drivers. Johann slowly nodded, then said, Getting on the ground is critical. We fuck that up, and nothing else matters. You'll have the lead driver. It'll work out. Johann said, I guess we'll see tonight. Have you decided on assignments for our guys? Yeah, my team's taking the television station. Armstrong squinted his eyes and said, That's the easiest target. I figured you'd be on the Prime Minister. He's the center of gravity. Johann said, I need to be able to control the overall operation. It's centrally located to all the other objectives, and I won't get tied down in a gunfight. I can flex as a reserve if I need to. Someone's got to be the ground force commander, and with you staying airborne, that leaves me. Armstrong nodded and said, "Okay, okay." I wasn't implying anything. "What did you give Andy?" Johan smiled and said, "He's got the police station, toughest target." Armstrong nodded and said, "He'll like that. So you're prepared to go tomorrow night? Barring some disaster at tonight's rehearsal, or something catastrophic at our planning session with the African SF guys, yeah, we will. Are we good on the safe house in Lesotho? I don't want to land to be asked where I want to go." Armstrong laughed and said, "Yeah, we're good. Tyler got us a compound. Some bed and breakfast with 5 rooms. We own it all." "A bed and breakfast? You're kidding me." "No, it's some rustic place out near the king's residence. A village called Morija." "The king? Are you serious? You're putting us near that sort of security?" "He lives about 7 kilometers away in another town. It's through the mountains and it's rustic, trust me. There won't be a threat. It's better than a hotel in the city. At least you can plan out in the mountains. What do we do if he tries to stop us? I don't mean tactically, like we run into his security. I mean strategically, like he comes out against us before we consolidate control. The people love him." "He's not allowed to. It's in their constitution. The king can't interfere with the government. We saw that in 2014 with the half coup that started this whole mess. He sat on the sidelines the entire time, letting the ministers of parliament and the military sort it out. All he's going to want is peace, and he'll get it with your operation. In 24 hours it'll be over, and he'll stay at the residence the entire time, with his men on high alert to protect him. He's not going to venture out to stop anything, and when it's over, he'll see the writing on the wall. He'll state the coup was for the best and something like, 'Why can't we just get along?' The people do love him, and that's going to work in our favor." Johan said, "I hope you're right." Armstrong said, "I am. I put a lot of work into this." Johan nodded, saying, "Tyler got the safe house. We couldn't get it on our own. He was offering the total package, and he's operated on the continent quite a bit. Why would I want to sacrifice profits doing the work ourselves? Because it means less chance of something getting fucked up, that's why. You trust him that much?" "I trust his greed. He wants to get paid, and he won't screw anything up before that occurs." "Yeah, you keep mentioning that he's fronting this whole thing. So what's he getting out of it? It's not money. Cohen's paying us flat cash, but he isn't for Tyler, or he wouldn't be donating all this shit for free." Armstrong saw the men coming off the drop zone and said, "I told you, it's not your concern. Time to get busy. The Lesotho men are waiting in the barracks." Before Johan could question him again, Armstrong shouted, "Andy! I saw that ass slide. Not what I remember from the recce's." Andy jogged up and laughed, saying, "I wanted to get closest to the mark. Didn't work out." He slapped Johan on the arm and said, "Still trying to beat this guy." Armstrong smiled, saying, "Everyone's been trying to beat Johan for years." Johan did not return the smile. He said, "But I always come out on top." He looked at Armstrong, thinking about his reluctance to discuss Tyler's payment. He didn't like being kept in the dark. It smacked of being used. He said, "Don't I, Colonel?" Armstrong hooded his eyes, and Johan turned to Andy, saying, "Load up the men. We've got some planning to do with the locals."
52. I was afraid the plastic chair I was in was going to break, which would definitely draw attention to me. That would be fine if I was trying to win some money on a reality television show, but it was decidedly the last thing I needed here. I hopped one chair over and scooted my bowl of gruel to me, something called bunny chow. It was basically a hollowed-out piece of bread full of bean curry and mutton. It looked as gross as hell, but was actually pretty tasty. I heard Brett on the radio. "Gaining a little weight there, Commando?" No, the chair was split on one side. Anyone heavier than a 5-year-old is risking an adventure. Shoshana broke in.
"Maybe you should skip the bowl of fat."
I said, "Enough about the food. Do we have 360 coverage of this place now?" The cafe itself had no walls, but was situated in the middle of the market, with tables and chairs like a food court in an American mall or airport. Brett said, "I've got the entrance and the northern side." Shoshana said,
"Coco and I have the south blocked and can see clean through to the northern entrance."
I said, "Okay, I've got the west, and can also see through to the east, so the surveillance is good. All that's open is an east exit." Shoshana said,
"You want Coco and me to split up?"
"No, not with the threat readout Coco gave us. Stay in place together. Someone accosting either of you will only bring trouble. We'll sort it out with what we've got." We caught a 9 a.m. flight out of Cape Town to Durban, packing everything we had and hastily finding hotel rooms in the new city. We knew Stanko was flying as well, but had no idea how. He could have beaten us using a private aircraft, which Tyler was more than able to pay for, or he could have ended up on our flight. He wasn't, but with upward of 7 flights a day, it could have been at any time. We'd landed, rented a couple of Land Rovers, checked into our hotel, and contacted the task force, and they had news. Stanko had talked to Eshan, and had set up a meeting with him at 4 p.m. today at a restaurant called the Queen Victoria Gourmet Cafe, in the heart of something called the Victoria Street Market. The conversation was strained, even reading it in black and white from a transcript, with Eshan wanting a public meeting and Stanko demanding privacy. It told me Eshan wasn't as stupid as the other target Stanko had killed. This one knew the danger of working his side of the fence. Stanko had threatened withholding payment, and Eshan had countered by questioning why he was afraid to meet publicly, which deflated Stanko's argument. There was no reason not to, if all you were going to do was pay for services rendered. Stanko had relented and said he was on the way, landing at 3, which meant he left after us, because it was only a 2-hour flight. Jennifer had done her due diligence with research, something she was a little bit of a freak at, and had learned that the Victoria Street Market was an enormous rat warren of Indian immigrants selling everything from spices to African masks, all under one gigantic roof. It turned out that Durban had the largest Indian population of any city on Earth outside of India, and way back when, they'd built this market when they'd been excluded from the city center because of their heritage. In the modern world, it had blossomed into no less than 9 different markets, spanning city blocks, at a place called Warwick Junction, and had become both a local place to shop and a tourist stop, if you were in a group with a guide. According to Jennifer, crime was rampant, and single females were easy prey. Jennifer said predators loved the place, and it was routinely rated as unsafe, with pickpockets and worse prowling around, which was why I'd had Jennifer and Shoshana pair up. Our females weren't, of course, easy prey, but I couldn't afford either of them becoming involved with teaching a pickpocket that his chosen choice of employment held significant risks, which meant I either paired them up with Brett and me, leaving me a team short, or I paired them together. I opted for the latter, figuring Shoshana's glare would scare the hell out of anyone thinking of attempting anything. We'd entered the market at 15:30, giving us 30 minutes of leeway, and found it just as advertised. Narrow alleys lined with stalls, all selling seemingly the same cheap-ass tourist knick-knacks. We'd split up, searching for the cafe, and Brett had found it, then vectored us in. Now I was eating a bowl of bunny food as we waited, checking out everyone who entered. I'd almost finished my bread bowl when Brett came on, saying, Ivan's in the net. I say again, Ivan's in the net. Northern entrance just went by me. Stenka was the only target we had whom we could recognize, so he was key to locating the contact. I casually turned my head and saw him enter, still dressed uncomfortably like a shady businessman, although with that usual Eastern European Boris vibe. The only thing he needed to complete the vision was a fedora and an overcoat with the collar turned up. He sat in the center of the cafe, not bothering to order anything from the counter, his head constantly swiveling around. Eventually, a man who'd been at the cafe before we'd entered stood up, surprising me. An Indian guy, tall and thin, with a gangly walk that reminded me of a stork. I'd assumed the contact would be African. He settled into the table, and I clicked on the net saying, "Target seated, acknowledge." I got a couple of Rogers, and said, "Anyone with a camera angle?" Jennifer said, "I got it, clean view." I kept my eye on the meeting, saying, "Okay, when this breaks up, we follow Mowgli. Let Ivan go." Brett said, "This naming convention is becoming borderline inappropriate." I said, "Well, we're in the business of being inappropriate." I watched them talk, then saw the conversation get animated, with Mowgli leaning forward and waving his arms around. Clearly he wasn't happy. Shoshana came on, saying,
"I think Ivan's trying to get him to leave. He didn't bring the money."
I said, "I think you're right, get ready." Eventually Mowgli nodded, and Stanko leaned back, saying something. They both rose and left. To the fucking east. I said, "Get on them, get on them. I can't get there."
Shoshana said, "We have them. They're entering the market."
Brett said, "I'm one row over." I stood and ran to the far side, saying, "He isn't going to pay. He's looking for a place to kill that guy. Don't give him any space." I heard Shoshana say,
"I've lost him, I've lost him." Then, "Pike, this is Coco, I'm breaking off, going parallel."
I said, "Roger that. Everyone, we're okay. He isn't going to murder him in the mall."
Brett said, "Pike, there are plenty of places in here to kill the guy."
Which was true. I said, "Anyone have eyes on?" I got nothing back.
53. Kurt Hale walked up the steps of the old executive office building with George Wolfe, his deputy commander. Fresh off of leave, Wolfe was wondering what shitstorm he was entering. He said, "So you've got Pike chasing a thread that has nothing to do with terrorism, but you think it does? Is that what you're going to brief?" Kurt said, "Yep." "And he's been freelancing all over Africa based on your actions in Las Vegas? Do I have that right?" "Pretty much." George said, "Why the hell do I ever go on leave? Every time I do, you dig us into a shit sandwich." Kurt opened the door and smiled, saying, "This time, we have the intel community on our side." "What does that mean?" "It means I might just be right for once." They walked to the room chosen for the Oversight Council meeting, which changed every single time they met, a product of being off the books, and turned in their cell phones. They entered a small conference room, seeing the usual suspects gathered around. Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Director of the CIA, and all the other Oversight Council members. They drew a small murmur when they entered, but nobody approached, not wanting to get tainted with whatever Kurt was going to brief. Talking beforehand might be construed as support. Better to just sit back and wait to see what happened. Only one man made eye contact with Kurt, Kerry Bostwick, the head of the CIA. He simply nodded, which told Kurt all he needed to know. Kurt took his seat, shuffling his papers in front of him while George took a seat in the back. The light above the door flashed, saying it was unclear, and the president entered. The room rose, and he said, "Sit down." He turned to Kurt and said, "I hate to be a broken record, but we need to get this done quickly." The one thing Kurt liked about President Hannister was that he made an effort to attend every single Oversight Council meeting, unlike his predecessor. The one thing he hated was that every time he did, he demanded the meeting be short because he was trying to cram it in between other state functions. President Warren, the man who'd created the task force, understood the implications of action and attended only when he felt it necessary, which had caused heartburn with Kurt in the past when the council devolved into a bunch of shouting. President Hannister had decided that he would attend every single one, but in so doing, he forced the meetings into a box that was smaller than necessary for the conversation. Kurt wasn't sure which approach was better. He stood and said, "If it's to be quick, then I'll cut to the meat. We need to get Omega authority for Tyler Malloy. He's about to gain nuclear triggers and sell them to a terrorist organization." Kurt saw the room draw back, all but Kerry Bostwick, his ace in the hole. President Hannister said, "Last time you briefed, you had a threat in Cape Town. Are you saying it's been proven by task force activity?" "No, sir. Not by task force. We've continued Alpha and are still pursuing the same, but we didn't get conclusive proof with our operations. We did, however, get proof from combining intelligence through all source collection, and we believe the threat is real." He flashed the first PowerPoint slide, showing the conversation Pike had obtained at the Castle of Good Hope. He said, "As you can see at a meeting with Tyler Malloy, these men are discussing an assault of some kind. We don't know what the assault is, but we do know from Pike's penetration of the warehouse that it's real. They're going to attack something." He flipped the slide and pointed at the transcript on the screen. "Tyler Malloy is aggravated about not getting paid, and the man in the room, Mr. Smith, describes that he was involved in Project Circle." He turned back to the room and said, "Project Circle was the South African nuclear program. They built 6 bombs before they dismantled the entire program, and Tyler Malloy wants something from it." Alexander Palmer said, "So what, you want to take him out because of a conversation? It sounds to me like we should be alerting state about this crap, not conducting rendition operations on foreign soil." Secretary of State Amanda Croft said, "I'm game with that. We can stop this through diplomatic means. It would take one phone call." Kurt said, "No, I don't think so. A man known as Mr. Smith is high up in the South African military. We don't know how far this goes. You alert them through diplomatic means and the whole thing falls apart. He'll get away." She said, "But we stop it." Kurt said, "For now. I want to stop it forever." Palmer said, "But you have no proof of anything other than this recording. All you have is a mention of Project Circle. Hell, he could be getting paid in scrap iron for all we know." Kurt said, "I would agree with you, but we've come upon some corroborating intelligence. Kerry, you want to weigh in?" The room looked at the DCIA and he said, "Sir, in general collection of potential threats, we caught a conversation between Hassan Kantar and an unknown American. Hassan is a known member of Hezbollah, and he's in the pocket of Iran. He's also discussing Project Circle." He passed around sheets of paper to the group, letting them digest the conversation. He said, "You'll see 3 key points. One, the unsub asks if he's secure, and Hassan talks about being on the resistance communication net, which means Hezbollah. They created their own net after the 2006 war. 2, he has a timeline that's pretty succinct, which is unusual. Why would Lebanon care about a timeline if it were innocuous? They wouldn't, but Iran would. The next JCPOA inspections are due in the upcoming weeks, which is the only reason Hassan would care. 3, Hassan talks about the delay causing a transfer to a country other than Lebanon, a country bordering Iran." He glanced around the room and said, The bottom line is that Hassan is up to no good, and we believe he's working with Tyler. Palmer said, How do you know that? I mean, how do you know it's Tyler? The name is masked. Why even bring this here without concrete proof? Carrie said, It's not masked. If I could unmask it, I would, but we don't know the far end. We only know he's American because of his voice. They caught this through a Skype conversation. We don't have a name. All we got was an IP address. It ended in Cape Town, South Africa, which is where Tyler was on the day this call was made. It's him. The group took that in. Then President Hannister spoke. Kurt, what are you asking for here? What do you think is going on? Kurt said, I think Tyler's doing something shitty on the African continent in conjunction with elements of the South African military. And he's getting paid with nuclear components from their Project Circle. In turn, he's going to sell them to Hezbollah, who will pass them to the Iranians. That's what I think. Palmer said, That's a bit of a stretch. You're connecting a lot of dots. Kurt said, Not really. We haven't collected any intel mentioning Project Circle in close to 30 years. And now we have two hits in the same week, one from a direct task force operation, and another from NSA collection of a known Hezbollah terrorist? No, this isn't fishing. We knew going into this that Tyler Molloy was looking for nuclear triggers, and I think he's found them. Not only that, but he's going to sell them to terrorists in the sway of Iran. Hannister nodded slowly, then said, So what do you want? I want Omega Authority for Tyler. Let me round him up and bring him home. Palmer said, Wait, he's American. Sir, with all due respect, I'm sick of that excuse. He's a threat, plain and simple. All I'm talking about is capturing him, not killing him in a drone strike. And we had no problem doing that with Anwar al-Awlaki. Palmer looked at President Hannister, deferring to him. Hannister said, Okay, say I do agree. Pike doesn't have a team there, and the flight alone is close to 18 hours. How can he do this? Kurt cleared his throat, then said, Well, sir, I've prepositioned assets on the African continent. I've got the rest of his team working a logistics contract on our base in Djibouti and the Horn of Africa. Kurt saw Hannister's expression going cold, bordering on anger, and he quickly said, Sir, I had to prepare for Pike finding something. They were nothing more than a reserve in case he got in trouble. So you weren't setting us up for your preferred course of action? Kurt said, Sir, if I was, I still had to brief here today. They're cleaning the crap out of pipes on our base, working in the engineering section. I wouldn't have sent them to Pike without authority. You say no, and they all come home. Croft, the Secretary of State, said, Who is it? Knuckles and Veep. You met Knuckles the other day, the guy with the long hair. Kurt saw her memory click and prayed. Favorably, she said, Yes, I remember him. Nothing more, but Kurt hoped it was enough. Hannister said, Okay, Kurt, I'll put it to a vote. Omega for this, as weak as it is? 10 minutes later, the meeting was breaking up, and George Wolfe sidled his way, saying, That was close. One vote away from a no. I was surprised the sec state said yes. Kurt packed up his briefcase and said, Yeah, I know. Thank the heavens for Knuckles. Puzzled, George said, What else did I miss on leave?
54. Stanko and the man we called Mowgli had walked through our one blind spot to the east. When I heard no contact from my team, I said, Okay, we've got a grid search. Start working it methodically, but keep pressing forward. They aren't going to circle around behind us. He left to the east for a reason.
Shoshana came on the net saying, "The parking garage is to the east, across the footbridge." I said, "Who's closest?" Jennifer said, "This is Coco, I am. Go, get to the footbridge, it's a choke point. Everyone else keep searching." Brett said, "This is Blood, I have him. He's still walking east, and he's got Mowgli's arm in his." Where are you?" I glanced around, and knew there was no way Brett could describe anything that would narrow our ability to find them in this maze. Brett said, "I lost visual in the market, but they're still moving east. That's all I can say. Everything looks the same." Shoshana said, Pike, we need to get ahead of them. I'm moving to the bridge." I said, "Roger that," and began running, slapping hanging silk scarves and pushy vendors out of the way, jumping over produce and cheap souvenirs, the stall owners yelling at me as I passed. Jennifer came on.
"This is Coco. I've got them. I've got the eye. They're at the entrance to the walkway headed to the garage. Ivan is forcing him now."
Shoshana said,
"Interdict. Take him out." "I can't. I'm on a vantage point for visual, but he's ahead of me. I didn't make it to the bridge."
Then,
"I lost contact. They're out of view."
"Did they enter the walkway?"
"I don't know. They look like they intended to, but the walkway's got walls. I couldn't see what they did."
I ran by a stall and saw the footbridge to the far side parking garage through the wood slats in the rear. I held up, realizing I'd have to run about a quarter mile through the maze to get to it, or I could just plow through the stall. I did so, ignoring the screaming from the owner, bashing my way through his wares and entering another stall on the far side. I did the same to him, ignoring the products hurled at my back, and reached the maintenance walkway that led to the bridge. I started sprinting, saying, I'm at the bridge, who's here with me? Shoshana said,
I'm close.
Jennifer said, I'm off, I can't interdict. Brett said, I'm 3 minutes out, I have a route. Running flat out, I said, Coco, break off. Get our car. Stage it outside the parking garage. Carry clothes on the target. Blood. Lock us down on the bridge. Prevent anyone from interfering. Brett said,
Got it. You think he's going to kill him in the garage?
Yeah, I do. I reached the footbridge, seeing it was also lined with people selling tourist crap, this time music, with a bunch of stalls full of pirated CDs. I sprinted down it for about 50 meters, then held up, searching. I didn't see my target, but I did see Shoshana, moving with a purpose. I clicked on. Carrie, do you have eyes on?
No, I'm on the bridge and moving to the garage.
Which brought up a decision. Were we ahead of them? Had they somehow slipped behind us? Should I stay here, providing choke point surveillance, and let her go forward, or back her up? I heard,
Pike, Blood, I'm at the entrance to the bridge, I got nothing.
Which made my decision for me. I said, Blood, close down the entrance. I'm halfway across and moving forward. Shoshana said,
I got him. They're in the garage, but not stopping. They're headed to the other side, to another market, the meat and fish one.
The damn place was so huge that there were markets all over the place, sprawling about like fungus. I said, okay, stay on them, I'm right behind you. I crossed the bridge, hit the parking garage and said, Carrie, I'm across, give me a lock on. She said,
I'm on the far side of the garage to the south, toward the entrance to the meat market, follow the signs.
I said, Roger, coming now. I saw the arrows for the meat section of the market and began jogging. I got about 50 feet, then heard,
Pike, he's pulling him offline. He's not going to the meat market. Mowgli's fighting him.
I picked up the pace, saying, give me an assessment. I heard her come through the radio, breathing hard, running towards something, saying,
he picked a corner. Away from everything, he's going to kill our target.
I started sprinting, saying, Carrie, be sure. I heard,
I'm fucking sure.
I rounded the first row of cars, searching desperately, then caught movement out of the corner of my eye, away from the walkway in a dark section of the garage. It was Stanko, and he had a garrote around Mowgli's throat, the man on his knees, the wire ripping the life out of him. I started sprinting toward them, and saw a shape spring onto the hood of a car and launch itself on the pair. Shoshana. She hit Stanko on his back, causing the wire to dig deeper. I ran as fast as I could, watching Stanko try to shake her off without the use of his hands. Shoshana snarled, reached for his face, and plunged her fingers into his eyes, puncturing the orbs and causing him to scream. He released the wire and began thrashing. Mowgli sprang up and ran like a lightning bolt toward the new market. I dove at him and missed. I rolled upright, flipping my head between his back and Shoshana's fight. I ran to Shoshana. She had Stanko on the ground, him keening like a wounded rabbit, thrashing about uncontrollably, Shoshana ripping him apart. I witnessed the Dark Angel in all its fury, the blood coating her wrists. She looked at me and hissed, "Catch the target!" I nodded, unsettled by the carnage. I turned and started running, calling Brett on the way. "Blood! Blood! Cross the bridge! Go to the meat market! Target's on the loose!" I heard, "On the way!" I ran flat out, trying to find the man, entering another maze of stalls, but this one selling fresh fish and meat instead of African masks and tourist trinkets. I went down one aisle, then heard people shouting an aisle over from some disturbance. I sprinted to the end and turned the corner, seeing Mowgli running ahead of me. I heard, "I'm across in the market. Where do you need me?" I thought, "Holy shit, that guy can run," but said, "Come straight in. I've got him in sight and he's slowing. He thinks he's safe. Coco, Coco, status."
"I've got the rover and I'm outside."
"Station at the entrance to the meat market."
"Where's that?"
"Fucking find it. Break, break, carry, carry, status." I got nothing and continued following our target. He slowed to a fast walk and I did the same. I heard, "Pike, this is blood. I see you. I see you. Where do you want me?" "Get ahead of him. One row over." "Roger that." I kept on the guy, and he slowed to a walk, breathing hard. I hung back, letting him think he was safe. He glanced to the rear and saw me, and his eyes went wide, convinced I was the boogeyman, which of course I was. He went batshit, sprinting flat out. I said, "Blood, blood, I'm compromised, I'm compromised." The target reached the turn to the nearest aisle, and a form launched itself across a freezer full of crab, hammering the guy at chest height and bringing him to the ground. I ran up, the people around us all shouting and yelling. Brett on top of the guy as he thrashed on the ground. He punched him in the nose and the kid screamed, rolling around on the floor protecting his face, his will to fight gone. I reached them and held up my hands to the crowd saying, "This man is a pickpocket. He's been stealing for weeks." Surprisingly, the owners of the stalls began clapping, some trying to kick him. I smiled and said, "Thank you for your help. All we want is for the market to be a place people want to come to." They cheered, and we hoisted the man to his feet, leading him to the exit. On the radio, I said, "Coco, tell me you're out front."
"Right outside."
"Roger that. Carry, carry, status."
"I'll meet you out front."
I didn't want to ask her what had happened to Stanko. I was just happy she would make X-Film. I looked at Brett as we duck-walked the perp out of the market. He said,
"If we make it out of here, it's going down in history."
I saw the entrance to the market and said, "Looks like we're making history."
55. Aaron heard the scurrying outside the makeshift toilet and waited for his signal. He got it 3 seconds later. 2 clanks of an aluminum cup from Thomas. He ignored the overpowering odor and stood on the literal bucket of shit, sliding his hand against the walls until he was level with a square window. Well, window was a misnomer. It was just a hole in the wall without any glass or bars. It was currently too small for a human to fit through, but that was why Aaron was standing on the bucket. The building was cinder block, but the window had a ring of bricks around it, all mortared in a less than perfect manner. He began scraping the mortar between the bricks with the handle of a spoon. His purpose was to weaken the mortar so that when the time came, he could create a hole large enough to escape through by smashing the bricks. And he needed to do it soon, because he had no idea how long the guards would allow the blanket they had erected to remain. Their toilet consisted of the stalwart bucket, and using it was enough of an embarrassment that Aaron had feigned erecting the blanket out of modesty, giving the men privacy. The guards hadn't taken it down, and the next day he'd raised it until it covered the opening of the window, then had pulled Thomas aside for a discussion. Aaron was losing weight, and along with it, the ability to fight. If he was going to escape, he needed to do it earlier rather than later, because he knew getting